You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the show, Ron Higgins, a Louisiana columnist, will join us to talk about what's going on at LSU. We'll also be joined by Ethan Westerman in studio to talk about Razorback basketball. The women beat UCA last night. The men play UCA tonight. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
Arkansas and LSU will play Saturday down in Baton Rouge. It's going to be an 11:45 kickoff on SEC Network. It's always fun whenever you play these games and there's nothing going on at the other school. It's actually the opposite of that. At LSU, Ron Higgins, a longtime columnist, he's with the Shreveport-Bossier Journal, joins us now. Ron, what's the last few weeks been like there?
Well, for any other state, it'd be chaos. Louisiana is kind of normal. You have a governor sticking his nose into LSU's business, and don't even know the can't keep his facts straight. He was hell bent on getting the athletic director fired, who was probably one of the best ADs ever LSU's ever had. He hired Kim Mulkey, he hired Jay Johnson, he hired promoted the gymnastics coach. All those people won national championships, and this governor Jeff Landry really just had a vendetta for Scott Woodward, and that happened after Scott fired Brian Kelly. We were all shocked that Brian got fired. We thought they'd give him another year, considering what he had to dig out of. Orgeron left him with like 37 scholarship players, and he had to kind of dig out of that. And they also NIL started, and he had to deal with that. That was a transition for him. And then the transfer portal. It was hit or miss the first couple of years. The second year, when Jane Daniels was second year there, their defense was awful because he got almost like four portal defensive backs he got were all awful. LSU couldn't stop anybody. And, you know, they wasted a Heisman Trophy year because their defense couldn't stop anybody. Last year, they were a little bit better defensively under Blake Baker's first year as defensive coordinator, but the offensive line was not. This is a great thing. The offensive line LSU had last year, I think all the starters now, except one guy who came back, are in the NFL. Yet they could run block anybody, nobody. And basically teams started playing LSU like they did this year, because this year's offensive line is even worse than last year's. This year's offensive line is non-existent. It's the reason – LSU has lost four games. It's all on the offensive line. Teams are basically dropping 7 and 8 and, you know, rushing 3 because they don't really have to. LSU can't run. Mm-hmm. They can't run anybody because there's no threat of running. Nussmeier's not going to run. He doesn't run, which is why last week, for the first time, it's been Frank Wilson entering his first game against Alabama. Put the quarterback, I'm sure Arkansas fans are familiar with Michael Van Buren. I think he threw for 300 on y'all last year. Mm-hmm. He's a hell of a talent, and he's fast. And he's what LSU – this is the debate that Frank Wilson has in his head. I think honestly, Brian Kelly had it too. Do I get with Nussmeier, who's doing the best he can – but an offensive line doesn't block anybody, and I know this kid has enough experience to get us in the right play, or do I go with Van Buren, who doesn't have as much experience, but who can escape really quick because this offensive line is so bad? And I think that's a debate that Kelly had, and he really never really played Van Buren very much. But last week, Wilson had seen enough against Alabama and put him in the second half, and he played okay. He really did. He played fine. So the debate this week, who's going to play? And Frank Wilson says both of them are going to play. We'll see. LSU's defense hasn't been the problem this year. I mean, it's had one really bad game, and that was the A&M game. And, of course, you know how good A&M is. Mm-hmm. They're loaded. And LSU, again, they stayed on the field too long that game. And a lot of these games this year, LSU's defense has been on the field too long, but they've held up. They've been, they've, Kelly made some great portal buys on defense. He's got great rush ins. Jack Popham from Florida, Jamari Butler from Nebraska, Patrick Payton from Florida State. Their defensive backfield got really great overnight. Mansur Delane, the cornerback for Virginia Tech, who is probably the best cover guy in the league. Tamarius Cooley, a safety. I think he's North Carolina. AJ Halsey, Houston safety. LSU's defensive back. LSU's defense is good. They give them their chance. But what's happened lately is that Whit Weeks has been hurt. A bone bruise on his ankle. He's out the last two games. I don't know if he's going to play this week or not. And he is the heart and soul of their defense. And, of course, again, Arkansas fans remember him last year. They made a play for LSU near the goal line. Mm-hmm. His brother West starts, and he's good, but he's not a Whit. Whit's really intelligent and kind of a sideline to sideline wild man, great closing speed, and that's kind of hurt him defensively. But more than anything, this offensive line has been so horrible, so inexperienced that they bought two guys in the portal, and both of them have been really good. Virginia Tech the center. Braylon Moore and left guard from Northwestern, right guard Josh Thompson. The rest of the guys LSU had are redshirt freshmen or freshmen, and they're just awful. I mean, they're inexperienced, but by this time you figure they get a little bit better. And as a result, the last two or three games, Nussmeier has taken a frightful beating. I mean, every time he throws, he's getting hit. Last week, finally, LSU started rolling him out more, which helped him somewhat. He throws really well off the run. But the problem is that they have no running game. Their running game is on pace to be the second worst in LSU history. Nussmeier doesn't have time to throw downfield, so LSU throws little short, quick passes to running backs and screens. And for some reason, he won't throw to the middle of the field. Defenses have figured this out, and they're leaving the middle of the field wide open, and he won't throw to it. The receiving corps is kind of beat up somewhat, but they got enough depth to get by. But they had too many drops last week against Alabama. They self-destructed offensively in the red zone like they've done all year. Their defense gives them a chance. The only problem is this week they're facing an RPO quarterback. And last week, Alabama's quarterback was the first stationary quarterback they faced since Cade Klubnik. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they're great against that. Against RPO, they're awful. RPO starting quarterbacks this year, all of them SEC, they've got them like 280 yards a game to just those quarterbacks average alone. So, you know, and of course, one of the best ones comes in this week to Baton Rouge. I mean, they've seen him before last year, Palin. KJ Jefferson played really well against LSU. LSU doesn't do well against option quarterbacks. And Arkansas can score. LSU can't score. They just can't. And it's amazing with all this talent they have, they just can't score. And it comes back to the fact that their offensive line is soft and confused. And last week, their first play of the game offensively and their first play, offensive play of the second half, were both false starts, which tells you how bad this team is, that they self-destruct or they don't block anybody. Yeah. So Arkansas fans, you got a shot. I'm telling you, I'm not lying to you. I know you're thinking, there's no, you know, I know y'all had it tough this year. But I'm telling you, this LSU team, it hasn't played well. It can't afford to get in a shootout with anybody. LSU's defense has got to hold this in the 20s. And as you've seen by the game this year, except for A&M, they've done that. Mm-hmm. They've given the offense a chance to win. Their offense just can't get it done.
Yeah, I think most Arkansas fans would say, hey, look, you know, we played Auburn. They had quarterback issues. Played Mississippi State. They had quarterback issues. And they both still came out of Fayetteville with wins in the last couple of games. How much do you think all of the stuff that's happening around the program with Brian Kelly and the coaching search. How much of that do you think might be seeping in and affecting players? And then even, you know, the coaching staff that's there right now, I'm sure they probably got an eye on the future. Hey, you know, this is the time you got to go out and talk to other people about potentially having jobs, players. Are you going to be here next year? Are you thinking about transferring? How much of that just starts to seep in the midst of this kind of lost season?
But that's got to be part of it. But, I mean, I'd say Frank Wilson, the interim who's been there, associate head coach, running backs coach, a veteran guy, he's real good at studying the obvious to the team and kind of get them centered and focused. But it still doesn't – to me, they can give all the rah-rah talk they want. They can say we're going to shut out all the noise all they want. But they can't trade for a better offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that has been the sole problem. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going around. I mean, it was just a bizarre, open date weeks for most teams. You know, they have a nice sedate week. They review the game film, see if they can correct the mistakes. Here at LSU, you basically, the governor comes in. He helps fire the coach. He fires the AD, and then he lies about not knowing the facts of the case. And then they name an interim athletic director, and then they name the permanent athletic director. Then the governor, then the president of the university, who they just named on Tuesday, backtracks and says, "Well, I haven't seen enough of the sample size of these permanent athletic directors. So, are you an interim or you're an athletic director?"
Mm.
And this is the kind of stuff that's going on now, better yet, now the latest. Everybody's going, LSU is a great destination. They'll get a good coach. Who is going to come in here and coach when you don't know who's the boss? Is it the AD? Is it the president of the university? Is it the board of supervisors who are handpicked by the governor? Is it the governor? And what head coach in this right mind coming to place where the school is trying to screw Brian Kelly out of all his buyout? You know, that Brian Kelly has to take him to court to get his buyout. Mm. And it's like, and they're claiming they fired him with cause. What cause? He didn't know it was without cause. Now they're trying to dig stuff up to see, so they can get out of paying his full $54 million. So, but if I'm a coach anywhere, look at this mess and saying, okay, well, They I can't trust him on the contract, and I don't know who. I mean, look at the circus going on. All these people. Who's my boss? Yeah, it's a great job. I love me. Yeah, but do I really want all of that? And you're gonna have to find somebody, I think, a bit desperate to get this job. And I know people outside of Louisiana find it hard to believe, because they think, well, God, LSU. You know, great tradition, you know, three national championships under three different coaches and two of them who nobody knows how in the hell they coach championship teams with Les Miles and Ed Orgeron, not two of the more brilliant football minds in the history. But I think that was an attraction for Brian. I think Brian Kelly came here thinking, man, if those guys won, I can sure win one here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he came in a time we had to, like I said, rebuild, and then NIL kicked in. And LSU wasn't ready for NIL, but didn't have a lot of NIL money until this past year. And that kind of put him behind. But if I'm a coach looking at this thing, they got a lot of things to consider. And, like, almost every week, LSU, the administration, does something to make the coaching search a little tougher on their athletic director, Virgil Osberry, a former LSU football player who's been in the department for, like, 30 years, a good guy. It makes it even tougher. Arkansas is kind of like LSU right now. You know there's the rest of the season left, and you'd like to get some wins, but there's more interest in the coaching search thing than the game.
Yeah. Yep,
I mean, it really is. At this point, and then that's strange because this game is rarely that. I don't know if they ever had two interims at once coach each other in this game.
I don't think they have.
You know, it's the battle for the golden boot, but it's also the battle of the coaches who got booted.
I want to ask you more. You mentioned something about RPO quarterbacks, and that's something I noticed about LSU this year. And what's interesting is that they actually had some success defensively earlier in the year against Trinidad Chambliss of Ole Miss and Lenora Sellers from South Carolina. Now, I know Sellers is having a pretty bad year. What do you think went well, though, maybe in those first two games that didn't go so well whenever they were facing Diego Pavia and Marcel Reed?
I thought that they did a better job of closing the middle. Those guys would escape up the middle. The guys who really hurt them, I mean, LSU's defensive ends. I mean, and also the LSU brings a ton of blitzes and looks. That's kind of Blake Baker, his MO. Mm-hmm. That's why I knew they would play well against Alabama last week. I mean, because as you know, their quarterback stationary. He didn't move. He's not going to run. You just get off the platform, and he has trouble. And he didn't. I don't think he ever took off up the middle ever. But you know, when you got guys who are RPO guys who are fast, and the pocket's collapsing, and all of a sudden they're gone in a blink. That's LSU's weakness right there. A lot of times they don't spy the middle. I guess A&M, we couldn't figure out why they didn't spy Marcel Reed. And I think Perkins was trying to do it, but he just like half the time was confused about what he was doing. Pavia, it's the same thing. That little son of a gun. I mean, everybody in the leagues, it's like the more you watch him, the more you just like, I mean, even if he beats your team, you just admire the guy because he's just a baller, and you know, he just makes plays. What he did this last game against Auburn was unbelievable. He might be the SEC Player of the Year. I mean, honestly, I think he should be. But LSU's weakness is that they'll collapse the pocket and guys will escape in the middle. And so, I don't know if there's a confusion on staying in your rush lanes or basically – they'll run blitzes that the teams will pick up and they'll find gaps. But that's been the problem. But LSU will throw a bunch of different looks and blitzes at you. And, it's like rolling the dice every time. But against his RPO quarterbacks, they've been, you know, Chambliss hurt him some too. I mean, he didn't. I mean, they did a good job on Lenora Sellers, who's really not surrounded with as good as players as he had last year. But, again, Taylen Green can play, and I mean Frank Wilson talked about this week. He goes, "This might be the best of all the quarterbacks we played this year. This guy might be the best."
Wow.
So I mean, they're definitely worried about him.
Is it a personnel issue this year at LSU? And if so, how did it get to that point? Because you know, you mentioned some of those coaches earlier, whether it be Jay Johnson or Kim Mulkey. It seems like LSU across the board has maybe done as well, and I'm talking about all sports, as any program that's been out there in this NIL collective era. That seems like they've got a real, you know, robust collective there. So, I mean, did they identify the wrong players? Was it a matter of, did they not have enough money? Because as I look at LSU, I say, hey, if LSU can't put together a better product on the field in this era, then it's just kind of odd. You know what I'm saying, Ron?
Yeah, but all the guys that got out of the portal this year have been good. Hmm. Problem is the guys who came back, it's a soft team. They're physically, they're soft on offense. Defensively, they've missed some tackles. I think, and you know, this last week when Wilson took over, Blake Baker requested, like, let's have some drills where we actually tackle and hit. One of Kelly's deals was that he didn't like to have physical practices in the season. He was afraid of getting people hurt. And so there was a lot of thud stuff. And it may have softened LSU's defense a bit, but last week they really hit, and both the offensive and defensive guys saying how much they enjoyed that. Like, man, this was like real football. But I think they're a soft team, and I mean, and look, they by definition they've recruited well. They've been a top five, top six recruiting team under Kelly every year. They've got good guys, but the line has kind of failed them, and That since he's been there, either the offense has been good and the defense is bad, or defense has been good, the offense has been bad. There's never been the same in the same year. And his offensive line really, I mean, LSU hasn't run the ball well since he's really been here. I mean, I know people look at like Jaden Daniels last season when, you know, LSU had a great rushing number. It's because of Jaden Daniels, a phenomenal talent. I mean, the first time we saw it at LSU practice, you know, like in fall practice, you know, you wear a red jersey, you can't touch him. And you can't touch your quarterback. You can't tackle him. He drops back to pass. I mean, he takes a shotgun snap, and nobody's open. And he runs 25 yards downfield before anybody can even put a hand on him, like, to touch him down. We all looked at each other like, oh, my God, who is this guy? Mm. But they – his second year, they won the Heisman. Basically, their running game was him. It was an aberration. It was an offensive line that just had to give you a little, him a sliver, and he was gone. He could go the distance. But the last 2 years, their lines haven't been good. Last year, again, last year's line, which could pass block, couldn't run block. This year's team can't really do either. And people go, well, how did Nussmeier get so bad so quick? Why should he just at the start of the year, he had an injury, a lower torso injury. Maybe some sort of pulled muscle in the stomach or something. It really bothered him to the point where he couldn't throw downfield. I mean, his first couple of deep balls in the games after Clemson, they hung up in there so long. I mean, they were picked. And LSU's got receivers that can just blow past defensive backs. The guy they got from Kentucky, Barron Brown, is a fast human. There's been so many times this year where he's just blown past defensive backs, and Nussmeier can't get to him. He didn't have the strength to because he was hurting. But his arm strength is back now. But now he's really getting hit hard every game. And, you know, and the fear is that Arkansas is going to come after him this week. I mean, they have great rush ins, and they'll blast him too. So they got to figure out somehow to alleviate that. That said, Frank Wilson said he has a name to starting quarterback, but he said Nussmeier and Van Buren will play. But I don't know who'll start.
Let's get you out of here with this, Ron. LSU fans, do they love night kickoffs more or hate morning kickoffs more?
Oh, my God, I hate morning kickoffs. Oh, my. it screws up their whole drinking schedule. I mean, like, they look at they, but, you know, LSU's play has a pretty good record in the morning, even in morning games. But the fans are like, 11:45, that means they're like, what, 3 o'clock in the morning we got to start drinking? Really? Frank Wilson said this week, he goes, you know what? You know what I'm going to do? You know, I'm going to tell the fans, listen, you need to get there Friday. But on Friday night, I'm going to go around. I'm going to get a golf cart and go around and thank all the tailgaters who show up on Friday night to make sure they're there for kickoff on Saturday. But, you know, I know LSU fans, you might be there on Friday, but you might not make the kickoff on Saturday because you're too hungover.
We'll see how it goes. I know Arkansas has played down there. Rarely have they played down there in the morning. I can only think of one other morning kickoff. You know, for all those years, it was the Black Friday game, and it was a mid-afternoon game. No. There have been a few Death Valley at Night experiences, but I can't remember a whole lot of times when Arkansas has played here in the morning. We'll see how it goes this weekend. Ron, we appreciate you joining us.
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Good talking to you.
All right, you too. Thanks, Ron. Ron Higgins of the Shreveport-Bossier Journal. When we come back, Ethan Westerman will join me in studio, but first a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can find them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan Westerman in studio with me now. We'll talk Razorback basketball here in just a minute. It's UCA week. They played UCA last night. The women did, beat them 89-77 in overtime. The men play UCA tonight, 7 o'clock tip-off on SEC Network Plus. First, we'll talk about this, kind of the story of the day, I guess, is the comments that David Basil made at the Little Rock Touchdown Club yesterday. basically, if you haven't seen this, he's upset about the trophies that used to be housed in the Broyles Center Museum. I guess they're in a storage facility somewhere here in Northwest Arkansas. They're certainly not on display in the football stadium anymore. The only trophies I can think of that are on display over there, the public can't see them. There are a handful of trophies, and I think the Grantland Rice trophy may be one of them, the national championship trophy that Arkansas got in 64, that are inside the Fred Smith Center, the football operations building. Now, you need like CIA-level clearance, I think, to get inside that building. Maybe not that much, but you know, I mean, that's not a building that you just walk into. You know, there's some trophy cases in there that, you know, I think the Burlsworth trophy is on display in there because of its ties to Arkansas. I think the Grantland Rice trophy's in there. There might be another trophy or two, like some, you know, national position player of the year, like a Doak Walker Award or maybe a Remington Trophy, something like that. You know, but all of these old Southwest Conference championship trophies, they're nowhere to be found. You know, the bowl trophies, Cotton Bowl trophies, things like that, they're nowhere to be found. And really, there's kind of a bigger story here that at the U of A, the trophies just in general are kind of hard to find. Like the national championship trophy, the actual NCAA trophy that the men's basketball team got in 94, that's inside the men's basketball practice center. Again, like the public can't see that. I think there's still the old Sears trophy, the crystal ball that they also received for winning the title. That's down in that old museum at Bud Walton Arena, which is sorely in need of being renovated. At baseball, you can see all of the trophies that they have. They're inside the baseball building, the Hunt Center, but that is open on game day where you can walk around and look in that little museum area. Track, they've got all their national championship trophies that are inside the indoor facility. They've got so many other trophies, though, that they don't know what the heck to do with them, Ethan. You walk into the track building, and there's like SEC championship trophies just on the floor because they don't know where else to put them. I mean, think about how many conference titles. There, you go around Fayetteville, and you see Penn relay wheels just on the walls of local businesses who support the track program. You know, it's like, hey, thanks for supporting us. Here's a Penn relay wheel. This is a really prestigious thing that we got for winning at the Penn relays. You know, so I'm kind of I'm big on museums. I like going into some of these colleges where, like Alabama, the Bear Bryant Museum is on campus, and it's really well done. You go into Fog Allen Fieldhouse at Kansas, and they've got an incredible basketball museum there. So I think Arkansas could do better in terms of having these on display somewhere. The problem is, where are you going to put them? And, you know, it's in this era right now where, you know, you're just kind of searching the couch cushions for every, you know, dollar you can find. I don't think anybody's going to be building a, you know, $1-2 million facility to house trophies. More than anything, I think it was just kind of a lack of foresight whenever they rebuilt the north end zone over at Razorback Stadium that they didn't have a better museum in the plans for the one that they took away from the Broyles Center. Because, again, that old museum at the Broyles Center, that was actually a pretty cool old museum that they had.
Yeah, and there's nothing to get, I think, anybody more riled up than bringing up trying to erase our past. And that's what just kind of got brought up from this whole discussion.
Or a trophy to David Basil. And we say that loving David.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, that's what came from. First of all, Little Rock Touchdown Club always has some just great storylines that come from there. It's crazy how much it keeps producing.
There's always something that keeps them in the news of the day.
For sure. But, I mean, that got people pretty fired up because it was just kind of like a big emphasis on trying to not preserve history and all these great players that have come before. And you're right. It's like, what is the solution right now practically? And David Basil said he'll, if he needs to go up here and get it in Old Main or something along those lines on campus, he'll find a way to get it done. But he said that they're going to get it done. It is funny because it's like, I went to Jordan-Hare last year when they played at Auburn, and I just thought it was a really nice recruiting tool, to be honest. I get it. Arkansas doesn't even have a Heisman winner. Darren McFadden probably should have won it. But they, in like kind of the recruiting area, they had a lot of trophies, and it just made it come to life. I saw it on my way out of the stadium. They had like the two or three Heisman trophies from their winners, a lot of trophies on the wall. And I was like, you know, as a recruit coming in, that's got to be kind of cool. On your visit to walk into an area where you can really see what the program has accomplished. I get it. Arkansas mm-hmm. doesn't have as much recent success as an Auburn, but they have enough history in the past that, you know, just putting those on display somewhere, I think it can be a recruiting tool.
I thought Jeff Long was doing a good job toward the end of his career of bringing back, you know, like they had all those banner ceremonies at Bud Walton. They brought back Eddie Sutton, Nolan Richardson, Corliss Williamson, Sidney Moncrief, a couple of women's basketball players too that they brought back and they did some things with. That's really been since Jeff got fired here up until the Darren McFadden. I don't even know what that was a couple of weeks ago, to be honest with you. Like, they didn't retire his number. They just put his number up in the stadium. It was kind of an odd ceremony, to be honest with you. But up until that point, like, they had done nothing in terms of bringing back great players and, you know, more than just a brief, hey, look, here's such and such, and you know, let's call the Hogs with them. You know, I think that I've said this a number of times, basketball, they are sorely behind in basketball in terms of doing things to recognize the history of Razorback basketball. Like Todd Day, you know, my son asks me all the time, he's like, Dad, who's the best player in Razorback basketball history? I said, it's one of three players. I said, it's either Sidney Moncrief, Corliss Williamson, or Todd Day. And the fact that you don't have Todd Day, who's the greatest scorer in program history, like, they don't win the national championship probably in 93-94 if they don't have the foundation that's built in the Mayday years, Mayberry and Todd Day and Oliver Miller and that group. You don't have anything about Todd Day in the arena. I mean, really? Like, what are we doing here? And there's so many others. The three I just mentioned, the Mayday years. You know, I would say that at Bud Walton Arena, if you go into Rupp Arena and you look up in the rafters, same thing at UNC at the Dean Dome, it's just lined with players, like great player after great. And these numbers aren't retired. It's just their jerseys up in the rafter. And I'm not saying Arkansas's got the history of Kentucky or North Carolina or Duke, because it doesn't. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't have history. You go into the Ole Miss basketball arena. What kind of basketball history do they have? They got like 13 players up in their rafters. And so there just hasn't been enough done to recognize those groups. And you know, I hope it happens. I was listening to David's radio show this morning. He had Bruce James on there, the great Razorback from the 1960s, and you know, kind of the thought that I think that there was kind of being kicked around at that point was that, you know, anything from the Southwest Conference days is really not appreciated as much because it didn't happen in the SEC. I've made this comment a number of times. You go to Baumwalker Stadium, look on the wall in the outfield, SEC championship, SEC tournament championship, SEC. None of the Southwest Conference titles are listed on the wall there. So I do think that there is there's some truth to that, that those SWC years just are not as appreciated maybe as the lack of whatever's happened in the SEC in the case of football.
Yeah, and I mean, in a lot of sports, that's where you have some really golden years, was those Southwest Conference days, where it really does stink if you're not going to give it the same type of recognition.
Bottom line, you wouldn't have any SEC logos on the wall if it wasn't for the Southwest Conference years.
For sure, and it's just, it's something that I know John Calipari keeps on beating the drum of wanting to do stuff like that, and usually you have a coach as influential as John Calipari,
he'll get your way. I bet they've got one or two players that they bring back to Bud Walton this year. Because he was so adamant about that last season.
And it felt like, I know you mentioned the Darren McFadden thing at Razorback Stadium. Like, it's like you can't really capture it as well as you can in an arena by, like you said, where you aren't retiring the number, you're just honoring it. It just, for some reason, in a football stadium, it doesn't have like the same feel to me. You just aren't looking up at it all the time.
That was a very weird deal. Yeah. It's like we're bringing Darren McFadden back to honor his number, but we're not retiring it. We're not really doing anything other than putting a five up in the stadium.
Which is, I guess, I mean, in theory, the same thing that you're doing when you put basketball jerseys up.
But, I guess there's some truth to that.
But it's not, it just feels different in basketball, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, I went to Fog Allen a few years ago, and I felt like, I was like, don't touch anything. You're on sacred basketball ground.
That museum is awesome. Did you look around the museum?
Oh, my gosh.
They've got if you've never been to Fog Allen Fieldhouse, by the way, they've got the original rules of basketball in there actually being read by James Naismith. It's a really, really cool deal.
Yeah.
Again, Arkansas, they could do they could stand especially to improve their
museums. Especially
in basketball,
there's enough really good players in program history that
without a doubt. I mean, I think we could sit here like you know, if you kind of put parameters around what players would you bring back? Okay, I would say anybody who was an All-American, anybody who was a Conference Player of the Year, anybody who has like a major program record, you know, like Pat Bradley, mm-hmm. three pointers, Kareem Reed, assists, things like that. Even if they don't fit into the,
I think even a Joe Johnson who was turned into an NBA exactly. All Star. I think not he's the type of guy that you put his jersey up and recruits walk in mm-hmm. and they go, "Oh, I didn't know he played here." Type of deal. But they recognize the name.
I mentioned yesterday, Mike Nail. I mean, you go to Kentucky, their longtime Kaywood, is it Kaywood Ledford? I think. You know, they've got a banner with his name up at Kentucky. Why isn't there something like that for Mike Nail or a Jim Robkin who was so influential, or you know, John George, who's been the voice of the arena for over 40 years now, both at Barnhill and Bud Walton? There's just a number of people. There's a number of people, and there's a huge backlog, especially when it comes to basketball, in terms of people who should and could be recognized. All right, let's transition real quick. We'll talk just a couple of minutes about what happened last night with women's basketball. They beat UCA 89-77. They pulled victory from the jaws of defeat. It looked like they were going to lose this game. You know, you're watching it in the third quarter, and UCA, you know, it'd be a four-point game, then it might get down to two, then it'd go to five, and then it might get down to three. And it's like at some point Arkansas is going to catch back up. But then the fourth quarter, UCA starts to increase its lead. I think it got up to 7 points with about, 2.5, 3 minutes left in the game. And Arkansas did a really good job of extending the game, making UCA shoot from some free throws. Arkansas hit some threes. They force overtime. And then I just thought that, honestly, it kind of looked like UCA just got tired in overtime, and Arkansas kind of, you know, was able to pull away. Bonnie Dees, that is a really good-looking freshman. I mean, she looks like she could – she has got superstar potential. And she's one of these that, because she comes from Australia, I don't know that people know a whole lot about her. But when you start kind of digging into the, you know, the type of accolades that she had on the international level, or at least with the national team there in Australia, I mean, I guess this probably doesn't surprise people who have watched her for a while. She and I think my big takeaway, because last night was really the first time that I've been able to watch them a whole lot this year, is they've got a lot. I know about a lot, but they've got multiple young players who I think could be pretty good here. It's just a matter of they're young players, and they're probably going to take their, you know, there's going to be a big learning curve this year.
Yeah, they've got several players that you want to retain and kind of build around, and Dees is at the center of it all because it's crazy to see a guard who's so influential in every aspect of the game. Like, she's getting double-digit rebounds. Mm-hmm. I think she's 5'7 or 5'8.
She might be their best defender.
By far their best defender. I would say it's not even close right now. Really? She's up in everybody's grill the whole game. I think Kelsey Musick said, wherever the ball is, she's going to be. She just has a knack for, like, finding the ball and being involved in the play. She's really good. But, yeah, it doesn't surprise me too much because of what she did at the FIBA stage this past summer, where she was in the All-Star 5, which they took on the USA in the finals. And USA has always been just really ahead of the curve in women's basketball. And I think she led Australia in that game in scoring, and they lost by, like, 10 or 11 or something like that. So it was actually pretty close for international play against the USA.
A respectable score.
Yes, because usually the USA wins in landslides and things like that. She's a good player. They definitely last night almost everything had to go right for them over the last minute and a half to even just get to overtime. Even a review on a three-pointer by Dees that it really might have been a two, but I don't think there was enough video evidence to overturn it. But it's like little things had to go right, and then they got into overtime, and all the players said that they could feel on the court that they were just more conditioned, to be honest, than UCA for that, and that they felt UCA getting tired. So it was, you know, here's the thing I'll come back to over and over this season with their team. I have no clue what their final record will be. It could be not great. It could be better than people expect. But you have to search, I think, in the first year of a coach for culture wins. And that's a game that I'm not sure in the past that this program wins, just with what was going against them. And they found a way to win. And end of the day, winning and losing is what matters. And it's UCA. I hate to say this over and over about little teams, but it's true with them that they're actually a pretty good team for their conference. Like, they're picked second in the ASUN. They had Missouri tied late in their opener about a week ago before Missouri closed that game strong over the last, like, minute and a half. Like, it's a team that really could win their conference this year. And I'm not saying that, like, Arkansas doesn't want to be in a place where it's just having battles with good mid-major teams. Like, you want to be able to still handle teams like that. But it's year one under a new coach. And this is a game that you could very well lose, and it's not like a terrible mid-major. But you're looking, I think, in year one for culture wins, and for a team that, honestly, every time that they've kind of been hit with adversity so far this year, they've found a way ultimately to get it done.
Well, you talk about culture wins, beating Louisiana Tech in the first game. That was another one where they were down 17-2, and you know, if that's the game last year, they may lose that by 30.
Yeah.
Or, you know, UCA last night, they hit the three that really felt like a dagger with what, couple 3 minutes left in the game, and it's a 7-point game. I think last year that ends up being a double-digit loss. There just seems to be more of a want-to with this team, and I think that, you know, like you say, in year one, when it's clear that they don't have the roster of the teams they're trying to compete against in the SEC, that just having that want-to and being able to pull out some of these in the non-conference, I feel like that, who knows, maybe that helps them in the SEC. Maybe they're able to, you know, pull one or two out in the SEC, because not every game in the SEC is going to be a blowout. Not every game in the SEC that they played last year was a blowout. But they just weren't very good at end-of-game situations. And I thought last night they were just a little bit better than UCA when the game was on the line in regulation, and then a lot better in overtime.
Yeah, there's about, I'd say, six or seven teams in the SEC right now that I fully expect when Arkansas plays them, it should just be a pretty lopsided game. But there's a whole group at the bottom, too, that I really do think they could finish as high as 10, as low as 16. It's just like there's going to be some games out there for them to go and win. The SEC at the bottom has a lot of teams that are have some red flags so far. But so far, you know, they're undefeated, and that for year one under a new coach, they found ways to respond, which is an encouraging sign. And I told Hank Layton, our photographer at the game last night, he asked me ahead of time, like, Arkansas should beat them, right? And I told him, I said, hey, I mean, they should on paper. I said, but if they aren't ready to play against UCA, they will lose this one, because I knew UCA was pretty good. And I don't think they were ready to play. I really don't think they played a very good game at all, and they still found a way to win. So that's important for them. I think the non-conference slate they have, they could theoretically enter SEC play double-digit wins, I would say, pretty favorable schedule. So if you can head into SEC, you know, at the 12, 13, 14 win mark, then it really doesn't take that many conference wins to start pushing a 21 season in year one.
Ethan, you're from Hot Springs. Have you ever heard of Champion Christian Basketball?
Yes. They actually were on the losing end of a game, I believe, against Southern University when I was like in the seventh or eighth grade, that I think might still remain the most lopsided score in Division I men's basketball. I don't remember the score, but it was ugly.
Well, the reason I ask, because Arkansas plays UCA men tonight. The UCA men played Champion Christian over the weekend, beat them 110-63 down at Conway. The only game that they played so far this year against a Division I team was North Carolina over in Chapel Hill on opening night last Monday, and they lost that game by 40, 94-54. Champion Christian, they play in the NCCAA, which I think stands for the National Christian College Athletic Association. I don't know where this is, but I would venture to say that that's even below the talent of what you would see at the NAIA level. So that kind of gives you an idea of what Arkansas's got coming in here tonight. I would say, I don't know, have you looked to see what the betting line is on this game? I would think it's a really big number, just given the reputation Arkansas has and what happened with UCA against UNC last week. But the point being that UCA just hasn't, they, I guess they've been tested by playing North Carolina, but it just feels like this ought to be kind of a cakewalk, so to speak, tonight.
Yeah, I think the betting line's somewhere around 35-40, which feels right. I just don't think that this is the type of game that Arkansas should have any trouble with. It'll be concerning.
34.5 right now.
34.5, okay. I gave Arkansas too much credit, I guess. But they, I mean, this is just the practical example of Arkansas just has the talent and athleticism that should just overwhelm this team. But it's definitely a game that if you're Arkansas, I think you just want to see improvements Even if, you know, this is the type of game that you want to, even if you win by like 40 or something, look back and not see some of the same problems that they had against Michigan State. I thought that against Michigan State over the weekend, some of the biggest things that stood out to me, obviously, I think the offensive rebounding by the defensive rebounding got talked about enough. Mm-hmm. But I also just thought like their half court offense got a little bit too much hero balls at some times.
They didn't work for a shot enough.
Yeah, it was too much dribbling around and having to just create something, which they have talented enough players to do that. But I just don't think in that type of road game, you want to rely on that. Like, it's nice you have players that could ultimately score even in bad situations like that, but you want to see an offense that's moving the ball a lot better. And I just think against UCA, you want to see them kind of just fix some of those things. I didn't think that Michigan State... it's encouraging for Arkansas that you can still barely lose a game playing like that, but you ultimately need to make fixes. And by the way, I do want to say, I found the ESPN in 2015 had the most 100, the 100 most lopsided games in like sports history, and Champion Christian did make it on that list for the 116-12 loss to Southern in 2013. So I just wanted to give that score.
I played an eighth grade basketball game one time where we were down 38-0 with a minute left and lost 38-4. Oh, basketball, wow. Not football, basketball.
Well, a nice little 4-0 run.
Yeah, to end the game. Let's see. Arkansas, they're kind of in this stretch where now this is where you learn a lot about your team. You played Michigan State, and you learned a lot about them there too. But now this is where, you know, in the next 2 weeks, you get the chance to really kind of fix things before you got to go play Duke again. They are on the, what I like to call the 7 o'clock on SEC Network Plus schedule right now. Next four games, 7 o'clock games. On SEC Network Plus, UCA tonight, Samford on Friday night. That's Samford, the Bulldogs out of Alabama, not Stanford, the tree. Winthrop next Tuesday night at Bud Walton in the Jackson State next Friday night. This is kind of like that, you know, and I, a lot of times I go back to baseball and I revert back to, you know, just baseball early in the season. You know, you go on the road. So, like, for the Razorbacks, they go on the road and they play in Arlington and they learn a lot about themselves. And then they come home for, like, a 9-game, 13-game homestand or something, you know, and they're playing a bunch of mid-major-type teams. And that's where they get really good before SEC play starts. That's where you really learn a lot about your team is during that homestand. I suspect that we'll be saying kind of a similar thing about Arkansas once they get through these next four games and they're going to Duke on – or to play Duke in Chicago on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you don't expect anything less than Arkansas to win its next stretch of games going into that Duke game. And you just hope that in those games they learn enough lessons to where they're ready to play Duke. And that's going to be obviously a big-time game. But I think that the biggest thing over the next couple weeks is you just want to see them really hone in and treat. I think one of the things you always like to see in a team that's talented like Arkansas is how do you treat these games that you should win? How do you go in a game that, honestly, if you bring your C game, you should still win by double digits? But are you going to go in and treat it like as if you are playing a Duke and go in with that type of mindset? I think that's what John Calipari probably wants to see in his team right now, is these freshmen, especially because you're going to be leaning on them a lot this year. I think that's clear enough through the first few games. Darius Acuff, Malik Thomas, even Isaiah Seely's gotten some run. How do those players grow over this next few games to where the next time they play a big game? They got Duke and Louisville back-to-back coming up at the end of the month and at the beginning of December. I just think you want to see those players really start to treat all these games with the same seriousness that you're going to need down the stretch. But a lot to fix from last Saturday.
We'll just talk real quick about a few things that we're looking for tonight. I'll give you three for me. Number one, Carter Knox. Is he, you know, does he look more like himself tonight? Because he didn't look like himself the other day against Michigan State. Number two, Trevin Brazil. How does he bounce back from that game? And then number three, and when you can out-athletic team, is that a word? Out-athlete teams? Basically, you have better athletes.
Yes.
And Arkansas is going to have better athletes. Scottie Pippen's not suiting up for the Bears tonight. And even if he was, I think Arkansas would have better athletes at this point in his career. But, when you're more athletic than teams and you score 110 points, it's like, whoa, man, that was a great offensive game. It may not be a great offensive game. It may just be that you just were a lot more athletic. What I want to see tonight is, are they running their offense better? Are they working more for their shots? Because I just thought that was the most disappointing aspect of what I saw from them over the weekend.
Yeah, and I think that's you just want to see the ball swinging around, getting good ball movement, good open shots. Because, I mean, they're going to get their – I'll be shocked if they don't get their fair share of fast break dunks and transition layups, all the stuff that adds up in the scoring column. I think you want to see that half-court offense, though, take a real leap up, because that's what was ugly against Michigan State, was the half-court offense, in my opinion. I just thought it was too much – you get late in the shot clock and you really haven't done anything. So then it's make your own shot. And I just don't think – I think Arkansas – like, they're lucky that they have players that will be able to score this year in those situations because they're so talented. But that's not – you don't want that to be your offense. I think that against Michigan State, the difference from my perspective, it felt like Michigan State on the offensive end really worked to get what it got. It just felt like they really ultimately obviously, even if they missed a shot, we're getting the offensive rebound and creating another possession. But even in just their half-court offense, it felt to me like they were working a lot harder than Arkansas.
And what does that do? It takes away the other team's legs on offense.
Yep.
And I thought that that's what it kind of looked like at the end. Arkansas just didn't have the jump shot.
And Arkansas needs game. To be honest, like that was – I'm not sure you want – there's like a better learning game than going to Michigan State. If you're going to lose a game, like that's a program that's well-respected. Tom Izzo, I think, has lost – once in his career in November
at home.
Yeah. Like that's a game that if you're gonna, you know, not look your best and put up a fight, like on the road at Michigan State is not the worst game to lose, but it is, you know, nonetheless, it was the first time this year that you kind of got to see Arkansas exposed in some areas, because they really met every challenge in the exhibition slate and then against Southern. I know Memphis exposed them a little bit early in the game, not being ready for physicality, but after that it was like it was hard to nitpick them, to be honest. And now against Michigan State, there's plenty of areas that you can say they need to work on, and that's ultimately what you want in non-conference play, because if you don't have things to learn from in non-conference, you'll get exposed in SEC play, and I think that's what happened to Arkansas last year whenever they just got punched in the mouth by Tennessee to start off SEC play. They have enough opponents on this non-conference schedule that if they don't get ready for a football game versus Houston in December, they got Tennessee first to start SEC play again this year. So I think that they'll learn their lesson with the physicality, and they probably already should have with Michigan State.
Yeah, I think they will too. Arkansas and UCA, 7 o'clock tonight. SEC Network Plus will be there. We'll have plenty of coverage on our website at wholehogsports.com. Hope to see you there tonight or on our podcast tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.